The time hath come.
That's right. The time has come. It is Parish of the Patriots, episode number 120. I always try to think of something clever to kick off the show. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But either way, I am glad you joined us this week. Always looking forward to a great discussion if you're new around here. We do have a Christian-specific segment. It's kind of how the name of the show and everything, it all kind of ties together. We'll do that later on in the show, usually around the halfway mark. So look forward to that. You know, whether you're a Christian believer or a godless heathen. Godless heathen going to hell. Either way, either way, you are listening. You are welcome to listen to that part of the show. Everybody gets something out of it, I think. Anyway, this show is supported by you, the listeners. I do appreciate your voluntary support. No paywalls around here. Everything is just out there for your listening enjoyment. But if you do want to be a part of financially supporting the show, you can find the information at the bottom of the description page. We have snail mail. Got Bitcoin, Monero. If you've got a weirdo cryptocurrency, drop me an email for that. I'll do my best to get you a address for that. And, you know, be sure and drop me an email for the listener supporter mailbag. Speaking of which, that's right, we're not wasting any time. We're going right into it. Dan, thank you for all the hard work you do and for the sacrifices you've made in your personal life for the truth and for honesty and decency's sake. God bless Nate. And thank you, Nate. Very much, very much appreciate it. Nate's bro. I often, you know, these back and forths, our listener supporter thing here, you know, we have further back and forth. Sometimes I email back and forth with people quite a bit. And obviously we don't discuss that on the show. We get into personal stuff. So, you know, it's all very good. Very much appreciated. Grandpa Dan, I send this in appreciation of your efforts and the spirit which moves you. Your words have helped me deeply, and though twilight may hold us now, dawn begins anew. May the Creator's light renew our darkened souls forever. Sincerely, David. And yeah, I got all the rest of this, and it's really nice. I appreciate it. I even really like the envelope, by the way. Good stuff. But that's going to blow through our listener supporter mailbag. We're 2 minutes into the show. This is very rare. Usually I have a whole bunch of these to go through. But actually, I do have one more. We do have one more listener supporter letter, but we're saving that for the Christian-specific segment. I got the easy route this week. Somebody brought us a topic to go into on the Christian-specific segment. So, you know, I didn't have to come up with something all on my own. That's really good stuff, too. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and just keep on trucking with the show here as we move along from the listener supporter mailbag. And of course, I'm recording this. I generally record these shows. They air on Tuesday. We don't do live shows. Thank goodness. You wouldn't believe how sloppy the show would be because I spend hours editing. So it makes some sort of sense. I record the shows generally on Saturdays, sometimes Sundays. You can vary, but generally it's a Saturday morning ritual. You know, sit down, record the show. And of course, the show goes up on Tuesday. So I'm recording this. This is no exception this week. Recording it on Saturday. And that's right. You know what that means? It's the day before July 4th. America, the red, white, and blue. We're putting that red. We bleed red, white, and blue. We love America right here. I'm going to tell you what, screaming eagles and bombing terrorists. Well, that's what we're about here. We got the independence. We're celebrating the independence and the freedom. I have no idea what we're independent from. And I have no idea what these supposed freedoms are, really. It's ever-changing. It's so much shifting. Now, originally, I guess the independence was supposed to be independence from the British crown. But, this overall hasn't worked out. This hasn't turned out quite the way I think the founders wanted it to be. These freedoms are ever shrinking. We're living under, of course, it's no secret anymore. We're living under essentially a malevolent oligarchy. I don't know any other way to put it. That's what we live under now. And you have people holding on to this delusion. We're going to take America back. We're going to take America back. I was talking to somebody the other day and they were talking about, you know, oh, they saw a deal where Trump held a rally and all these people showed up. And I asked them, I said, what was the point? I asked this person, I love having IRL conversations. I mean, I love doing the shows and the back and forth we have through the listener supporter mailbag and whatnot. But I love having IRL conversations with people and talk with people. It's like, oh, what's all deal and video and Trump held a rally and people showed up and what? Well, he might run again in 2024. So they stole the election. I mean, we know that. I mean, they're making all of these laws. You know, if they have to, we have this. This happened. This was a real thing in history. But they're basically trying to make it illegal to point out, you know, to question this historical event. Where have I seen this before? Where have I seen this pattern before? Where they want to essentially make it illegal to question the official narrative of a historical event. In this case, we're talking about the election of 2020. They stole the election. Now the same people who stole the election are going to let Trump win in 2024, and he'll be how old again? It's all pointless. I mean, at this point, I think Trump's just running around doing stuff just for Trump attention. I don't know. I don't even know what the hell's going on with this guy. And yet people are clinging to this. Like it's this Trump is the trust. You know, that's how people get sucked into the Q-tardation. It was going to be, don't worry, trust the plan. On Inauguration Day, it'll be Trump up there. The military's going to make sure of that. And then Inauguration Day came. And it wasn't Trump up there. And then they said, well, I don't know, March or April or some shit was the traditional constitutional inauguration day. You got to, she's silly. You're not trusting the plan. This is way too deep for you to understand, but we understand it because we got this cryptic writing off the internet. April or March or whatever the hell it was, I don't even remember. April Fool's Day, might as well be April Fool's Day, is the real inauguration, the traditional inauguration day. Trump's going to be inaugurated. Well, April Fool's came and went, and we still got the Biden administration. And I like it how the media so often will not say Joe Biden. They will say the Biden administration. It's like a Freudian slip. They're letting you know there's like a little truth in that. See, they're acknowledging that Joe Biden ain't doing shit because he don't know whether he's horseback or foot. It's the Biden administration. The Biden administration is still running things. And now what? They're saying in August, keep trusting the plan. In August, this will all be wrapped up. All these people are going to be in Guantanamo Bay being executed for treason. The military's in charge. Trump will be back. Stop. Just stop. I hate it when people can't deal with reality. And I understand. You know. We're living a turbulent time. They're attacking you mentally, spiritually, from every angle now. They're purposely sowing chaos and confusion. Which, by the way, if you're a Christian believer, you understand that is what makes it satanic. Not just the evil things. It's the chaos. Satan is a bringer of chaos. I'm not getting into the Christian-specific segment. Don't freak out. Those of you don't want to hear it. But that's what makes it satanic. People throw around and say, this is also satanic. But they don't even understand what that means. Satan is a bringer of chaos. The Lord is a bringer of order. But I digress. They're bringing all of this chaos into people's minds and their lives. They're locking down. They're not locking down. They're going to force you to get a vaccine and a vaccine passport. But they're saying they're not going to do that. You've got Every aspect, we're supposed to celebrate man on man anal. You're not supposed to look at a woman sideways, no matter how much she may be scantily dressed, begging you to essentially stare at her lustfully, because that would be sexual harassment. And if you're in a relationship with a woman and then you break up, she could decide that you raped her and you could go to jail. All of this chaos. And people are all just looking for something to cling to. People losing their shit. Somebody told me the other day, I don't even remember what they were talking about. And they were like, man, people are going crazy. And yes, literally. People are losing their shit. One of our goals here with this show is to keep you from losing your shit. It is my duty. It is my great sacrifice for you, the listeners. If I do nothing else with this show, I want to keep you from losing your shit. Because then You need to quote the outlaw Josie Wales, then you neither live nor win. It's just the way it is. If you lose your shit, you lose your head, you gain nothing. You lose. So you got to keep it together. It is. I'm making kind of a light of it, but really one of the really goals here is to make you understand you're not crazy. The world has gone crazy. It's not you. People want some sort of familiarity. I hear people still talking about saving America. This thing is done. I don't know how many times I have to say it. This is dumb. You're not saving America. And really, because there are so many people out there, usually like normicons, and they have this vision that somehow they're going to turn this around and this government will suddenly work for the people. If you spell it out like this, it sounds more and more absurd. I feel silly just for saying it. But this is what it comes down to when they talk about we're going to save America. Really, what are you going to do? We're going to get back to the founders. We're going to turn this government around. It's like, so Washington, D.C. is going to go from being a malevolent shithole that's working to destroy the people of the country to suddenly they're just going to 180. They're going to turn around. They're going to pass laws against child trannies. They're going to quit pushing man-on-man anal for the whole world. They're going to stop doing all that. They're going to quit. They're going to renounce the anti-white race hate agenda. They're going to say, wow, you know, really this isn't anything about slavery. Y'all didn't quit committing so damn many crimes, but we get that y'all kind of, you know, can't help that in a lot of ways. You know, that's gonna, does any of this sound realistic? No, it's not realistic. This thing is done. The spiral is way out of control. We're way past turning this around, decades past turning this around. And why would you want to? Aside from what, running around, no matter how much you run around, wave your flags and talk about how much you love America, what is there? What would you want to save of this? Now, patriotards will get all offended about that. You say, whoa, I'm offended by that. No, this is the parish of the patriots. We promote true patriotism here. It's not the same as a patriotard. A patriotard will just get all triggered by these truths because, see, a patriot doesn't have to get triggered. A patriot is not offended or triggered by the truth. He can look at this reality. And in a functional society, you can look at the flaws in your society and work to fix them. Now, we're beyond that. But a patriotard ignores reality and just wants to chant USA, USA. A patriotard sits there and says, yeah, the media lies about everything. But then when the media turns around and says, you know, Putin's invading Ukraine or the Chinese want to do whatever, they control the U.S. government and all the politicians, they turn around and believe everything the media says because it fits into the little script. They're the ones who get so easily manipulated. That's not what we do here. We look for truth. They want to say, we're going to turn this country around. What? Why would you even want to? And you couldn't if you did. I still see people. It's one of the most cringe things now. I mean, it is such a meme at this point. You know, on the rare news sites that you can still read comments, RT is one of them. The Daily Mail is another. But I was reading an article the other day. I don't even remember what the article was because it's irrelevant now. But they have comments at the bottom. Sometimes the comments are pretty good, pretty based. But then I saw one that was the inevitable. Well, America's not a democracy. America's a representative republic. I do not know why these people think this is this great revelation. It's like a normicon virtue signal. They throw this out there. I mean, they might as well just cut and paste it because they all say the exact same thing. America is a representative constitutional republic. Y'all don't know anything. What's that change? What does that change? They act like that magically changes something. We would be better off with a direct democracy than what we've got now. Imagine if this country, if the founders just set up as a direct democracy. Well, folks, we're going to hold a vote, nationwide vote. Okay, what are we going to do? What's the vote for? We're going to go to war against Iraq. This vote's failing miserably. Can't do any of that. A direct democracy would be better than the shit that we have now. And yet these people throw that out there like they just laid down. Ha ha. Fixing the red pill, you buddy. You listen to Hannity lately? You listen to do you even AM talk radio? I don't think so. Because if you did, you would know America is a representative republic. It's a constitutional representative republic. And this is the way it's. What does that change? Doesn't change anything. It's just stupid. I mean, you know, rhetoric has its place. But if it's just stupid rhetoric, it doesn't have a place. It doesn't even accomplish anything. It's just cringe. Please stop that. Back in the days when I used to waste my time with social media, I remember one time I had somebody lay that out there. They just threw it out there. They don't let me. Like they're informing me. Like I don't get it. This person whose idea of super edgy, you know, speaking unspeakable truths is what they hear on AM talk radio, or maybe Tucker. Tucker's probably a little too edgy for them. They lay this, you stupid, you're just dumb. You don't even know America is a representative republic. Rip out that line. It's all constitutional. You don't even know how this government works. You're stupid. And my response was something along the lines of, oh, so you're saying that representative republics really suck. What do you mean? What does your government do that you like? What are they promoting that you like?
Well, nothing, but I mean, you know, but the founders,
they're irrelevant. This is what we have. If you're going to throw that out, oh, yeah, it's not a democracy. Look at it. It's a representative republic. So what you're saying is representative republics are the shittiest form of government, even worse if it was imaginable than direct democracy.
But, no, I mean, my founders.
Stupid. Shut up. Don't want to hear it. I can't take it anymore. The level of cringe. Things we look at. My freedoms. Lots of red, white, and blue flying around. God bless America. I always enjoy telling people, yeah, no, I don't think he's going to. Because I talk to the Lord on a regular basis, and he hasn't said directly what's in mind. But I'm getting this whole hellfire and brimstone wrath vibe. I'm it's funny to tell people that IRL because they always look at you kind of funny.
Yeah. God bless America. Not gonna.
Gotta cleanse it with fire. Hopefully sooner rather than later. Because I just don't know. It's getting harder and harder to take the insanity. And we contrast this. You know, like I say, this is July 4th weekend that I'm recording this to see all of this disgusting fake patriotism. And it is. It's fake patriotism. And I'm not trying to just be negative. You know, I'm really not trying to be contrarian. I'm not even trying to put people down because they're trying to hold on to some kind of tradition. I get that. And maybe I'm just being a little harsh. But again, I find it really hard with seeing people just have this breakdown, this inability to deal with reality. We're going to have red, white, and blue parades. This after we just finished up an entire month of man-on-man anal pride. The LGBT alphabet P, heavy emphasis on the P agenda. Pride. We had a whole month. You get 1 month to celebrate my freedoms and wave your flags around. But you get an entire month to celebrate man-on-man anal. But God is going to bless America. It's just disgusting. I find this so off-putting, all of this fake patriotism, flag waving, God bless America, USA, USA shit. I find it also nauseating because it's also fake. It's also fake. We live in a clown society. We live in a society that they hate the population. They are promoting the anti-white race hate agenda that is being promoted in every aspect of our society at this point. But I'm supposed to love it. They generate hatred. One race, you know, other races against one particular race. If you look at the steps that generally happen before a genocide, I'm not trying to be over the top with this. We're well into the dehumanization stage of this. It's important to grasp it because I have to dehumanize you because, you know, people won't just go out and commit horrible acts of violence against other people if they view them as human beings. You know, there's an intrinsic reaction not to do that, so they have to dehumanize you. They have to turn you into something not human. You're just an inanimate object. That's why they start off with things such as statues. They tear down your history because humans have history, and you're not human. You're not a person. It's all part of, we're well down the road, this dehumanizing. Now they're openly saying things. Saw this ridiculous, y'all probably saw it, this ridiculous video of some shill trying to claim that critical race theory is not anti-white when it is specifically is that very thing. These people are openly calling to quote-unquote end whiteness. End whiteness. What does that mean? Well, that means we're far enough in the dehumanizing stage. Now they're talking about ending you. They're literally saying kill the white people like they do in South Africa. See, they're further along. How long have we been warning? How long have I been warning? How long have many of you been telling the world, look at South Africa? It's the Beta Project. This is going to be the larger scale plan. Kill the Boer. Kill the white man. Not quite there yet. We're talking in vague enough. Plausible deniability. End whiteness. Can you imagine if I did this show and if I sat on this show and said, we need to end Jewishness. I guarantee you I would be in trouble so fast that your head would spin. And yet these people, they don't get any heat for it. They continue to get prestigious, high paid positions, and they publicly write articles in quote unquote mainstream newspapers talking about ending whiteness. Now, this person on the video was trying to claim that their proof the critical race theory is not anti-white was because they attack people who aren't white, non-whites, who don't support critical race theory, who don't support the anti-white race hate agenda. Well, that's because those people are viewed as traitors. You know, if you have blacks that say, I'm not going to go along with this, you know, anti-white race hate agenda that you're pushing, all of a sudden they're not useful anymore. They're viewed as traitors. You're always going to have traitors that look around and go, yeah, no, I don't agree with this program. I'm morally against it. I'm not going to do it. And they viewed as traitors. And traitors usually get treated, honestly, worse than those who are being targeted. To try to present the backlash against non-whites who don't support critical race theory and say this proves that it's not, that critical race theory is not anti-white, is silly. It's acting like traitors have always been tolerated. No, traitors are always treated harshly. And by the way, as a white person, I would just like to take this moment to say, I appreciate those quote unquote traitors. It has such a negative connotation. But in this sense, those are people who are taking a moral stand. Those are non-whites who are saying, no, I don't agree with this anti-white race hate agenda. I'm not going to submit to it. I'm not going to be manipulated by this. I'm not going to be controlled by this. And you're not going to generate this hatred in me for these people that haven't done anything to me. I mean, I celebrate. They're viewed as traitors. That's why they're treated this way. It's not surprising. Surprising. I mean, this is the way traitors have always been treated. But because somebody is a traitor doesn't mean they're a bad person. It means they're actually taking a moral stand in this sense because of what they're promoting is evil and wicked. So I do would like to take a moment because of, you know, when I say traitor, I don't mean this in this sense as a negative thing. These are people taking a correct stand morally. So, I mean, you know, much kudos, hats off to those people. But this in no way proves that critical race theory is not actually anti-white. That is stupid and I think intentionally misleading. And I'm getting off on a tangent again. But you have this backdrop. I'm trying to lay up this backdrop of this July 4th thing. This is what we're supposed to be celebrating. This is what we're... Who's celebrating it? If you're white and you're celebrating Independence Day is this great freedom that you're celebrating. We live in a country now that hates you. They're promoting an anti-white race hate agenda. If you're black, what are you celebrating? A country that tells you, a system that's telling you 24/7 that your whole existence as a human being is defined by your ancestors being enslaved generations ago. You don't have any current worth. And so on and so forth. What is there for anybody to celebrate? Just hate America. I hate what this has become. The society is sick. It's dying. The sooner the better we get this over with and maybe break up and refigure this out, the better. Maybe before they get us into a war that kills millions and millions of people, because that's where they're heading with this. But what I was trying to lay the backdrop of is here we have this July 4th here in the U.S., and the backdrop of what this society looks like. Now, China was just celebrating their 100 years of quote-unquote communist rule. And I don't want to get off into that, but what I did want to contrast with this is because I saw these stories in RT primarily, and you have these big patriot displays and the people and the government is at, you know, the leaders up there and the people are waving their flags and there's order and all of these military displays and talk of patriotism and all that. And that's good on them, you know. But the contrast I wanted to draw here, and there is a contrast, is the difference between a system where the government doesn't actively hate the citizenry. You have a homogenous society here, and the government doesn't have utter disdain for the citizenry versus what we have here. Versus, when you compare that to a country to where the government is run by the same racial makeup of people that make up the citizenry, even though, yeah, they're rich and they're powerful and they run the government, there's still a shared kinship with the citizenry because you have a homogenous society. And you're going to find that in any homogenous society. Those at the top still will feel some level of kinship. I mean, you know, they're sure there's going to be class, there's going to be social status and all of that, but they're not going to hate. They're going to have a deep-rooted hate of the common man in the sense that, and I mean, they may look down on him and think they're better, but they're not going to hate him. They're not going to want to see him like wiped out because there is a racial kinship there. In this country, there is no racial kinship. This was, you know, I don't know, a dwindling white majority country, but it's anything but whites running the country. This is what happens. It's what happens when you have largely foreign oligarchs who hate the citizenry, who hate. There is no racial homogeneousness. There is no racial kinship with those who are running things versus the common people. In fact, they hate them. This is obvious. If they didn't, they wouldn't be promoting the things they're promoting in every aspect. It's not just from the government and the media, all of these different areas. People, and that's one of the things people fall into. Well, it's the government's the problem, but it's not. I mean, the government, yeah, is one aspect of it, but the government doesn't control Hollywood. The government doesn't control the media. The government doesn't push all of these weird social trends. The government isn't starting all of these private corporate NGOs that are promoting all of this global homo agenda. And the government is just one part of it. There's just one arm, but you can't ignore all the rest of this shit. I mean, the government isn't forcing Twitter and Facebook and the social media companies to ban anybody that doesn't go along with global homo. So you have to understand it is a farther reaching thing. This is such a, how does anybody deny the fact that we live under an oligarchy? If the government was simply going around banning and limiting speech, then you could say, oh, well, yeah, this is a government thing, but it's not. I mean, they're technically not doing any of those things. These big companies, corporations, they're doing this. Hollywood, you get all of this stuff going. This is the oligarchy at work. In this sense, the government is nothing more than a tool. That's all they are. It's just a tool. You get so focused on the tool. If somebody was, I don't know, trying to smash you with a hammer, would you just be focused on the hammer? I mean, yeah, you'd be looking at that, but you would be thinking, yeah, if I could stop the person wielding the hammer, the hammer would be irrelevant. You pick the hammer up and drive nails like it's supposed to be. So the hammer is not the problem. The government's just a tool. The tool's being wielded by the oligarchy who hates you. I mean, that's a reality. I don't know how you can put it any other way. They're publicly promoting this message of end whiteness. That's pretty hateful. But if you point out their hatefulness, you're doing hate speech or something. You're inciting hatred or something if you point out that they hate you. It doesn't even make any sense. It doesn't have to make any sense. Needless to say, I won't be going around flag waving this July 4th. I'm not going to be going around celebrating something that doesn't exist and hasn't existed in a long, long time. It's pointless. Why would you pretend something is there that's not there? It's just self-delusion. It's like a form of mass insanity. Why would you want to partake in that? I won't be doing that. Take heart. There's nothing that says this agenda is going to work out. This thing is going to collapse on itself. I really believe that. It's probably going to get a whole lot rougher before that happens. And then when that happens, it's going to be rough. The best thing you can do, you know, is you're going to have people You know, we got to do something. Best thing you can do is keep your mind together. Don't lose your shit. Keep it all together. Keep your sanity. Form real bonds, real relationships in your community and with those around you. Try to stay out of their way. I say that, and I do this public show. Just opens me up for attack, but somebody's got to do it. Try to stay out of the way. Don't get caught up in the machine. Don't get caught up in this machine that just wants to chew you up and spit you out, that wants to end your whiteness. Try to form real bonds in communities with people around you, because we talk all this negativity about this entity now known as America, but there's still people here. There's still well-meaning people here. Some of them are misguided. You're going to have to just live with that. It's tiring. But try to do your best to form bonds, relationships, and to go on and keep living your life. Set yourself up as best as you can. It can seem so black-pilling, but understand this. We understand that societal collapse is not just coming. It's taking place right now. And what order is appears, what predictability seems to be left in society is soon going to fade away, is soon going to be lost and cast away as it all comes crumbling down on itself. We at least understand this. You have to understand the vast majority of people out there don't. And when they wake up one day and the entire system is imploded on itself, they're going to be lost. They're going to have no clue. They're going to be caught completely unprepared. Where at least we understand, and there's only so much you can do to be prepared for things that are coming. But you can do what you can do. And if nothing else, at least when those things do come around, you won't be caught surprised. You won't be confused as to what it is you're seeing happening. So, you know, understand that this descending into this level of chaos, this thing is doomed. I really don't think their plan for global dominance is going to work out. Maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but I don't think it's going to work out. I think the whole weight of this is going to collapse in on itself. The U.S. is tearing itself apart, and the rest of the West, so as the U.S. goes, so goes the rest of the West. So when the U.S., as this whole thing starts imploding on itself, you're going to see all of that in these other countries, like in Europe. You can see all of that start to drop off there as well. So anyway, yeah, we got to wrap up on that note and get into the Christian specific segment this week. So cheerful. Yay. God bless America. So you know what to do. Let's get in there. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's Christian specific message, the sermon this week here at the Parish of the Patriots. So as I alluded to earlier, this week's Christian-specific segment or topic is going to come from the listener-supporter mailbag. So let's go ahead and read that real quick. Grandpa Dan, today I had an interesting confo with a normie who had been married for a little over a year, and he asked my advice on a topic. His in-laws were attending to his business concerning... Okay, I wasn't listening at this point. What I told him was, the answer to your question is a simple phrase in your marriage vows, forsaking all others. Could you go over the marriage vows, or at least comment on your show? And that's from Mr. T. Well, we will. I apologize in advance, because I'm probably not going to go over what, you know, exactly what you were thinking of. But that's what happens when you send me something and it gets my brain rolling and it gets me thinking about different subjects and different angles of looking at things. So we're probably going to go way off on a tangent from what you were expecting. Apologize in advance for that, but that's how it is. That's how it is on this show. No, we'll go ahead and break down into the marriage thing a little bit, but instead of just simply going over vows, I want to look at this in a very realistic, once again, a realistic approach, because what's the point? What are we talking about? I mean, if you're middle-aged and say you've been married for the same woman for several years, well, you know, you've pretty much got this figured out. So who are we targeting here? Maybe younger people like what you're talking about here. You had a conversation with that, you know, a younger person, they've been married about a year, starting to go through some of the tension at struggles. What does that mean? Or perhaps people that are seeing somebody looking to get married, or maybe you're just completely single, not even dating, and you know, but you want to get married someday. How do you approach these things? You know, really practical stuff that can help. That's our point here of what we do at the show. I mean, we really want to go over stuff that helps people. And I thank you for the topic because this got me, like I said, this got me thinking. Like I say, I apologize in advance because at the end of the day, it's probably going to be like, well, that isn't really what I was wanting to hear. But it really got me thinking and getting off into the subject because so many people struggle in this. So before we get off into that, let's go ahead. We're going to, I mean, because this stuff is played out, laid out pretty plainly. We'll go to our Bibles and get that out of the way for now before I go off on who knows what direction. And tangent. I mean, it's pretty well known verses here, but we're going to go ahead over it real quick. Ephesians 5, we're going to do 22 all the way through 33, because here it's spelled out for us pretty plainly how this is supposed to work. Of course, we're unfortunately in clown society, we're so far removed from that that I might as well be speaking foreign gibberish here. But let's go ahead and do this. Wives, submit to your husbands, unto your own husbands, as unto the Lord. Women have a real hard part. There's a lot of people, and you were talking about going over wedding vow or marriage vows, but now everybody's rewriting them. A lot of women now refuse to recite the part to submit. They got a real problem with thinking, look at this submit. And so they're entering into the marriage already in a state of rebellion. I really, if you were going to do the wedding vows and you thought you found you a good Christian woman, young woman, you're going to get married. And you're like, well, you know, you propose. She says yes. I keep thinking of the song, by the way, of the old Jerry. Here's your music reference for this week. Jerry Reed, She Got the Gold Mine, I Got the Shaft. There you go. If you haven't ever heard that, you need to go listen to that. You can listen to that before you before listening to this this segment of the show. You can just pause right here. Go listen to that and come back. And when you're done laughing, you know, we can go ahead and get serious here. No, but really seriously, if I was getting married, if you were getting married and you think you found you a good tradition, and you're like going over, well, I want to do the traditional marriage vows. And she's like, well, that's fine, but I'm not reading that submit part. Red flag, red flag. She's already entering into it in a state of rebellion, my opinion. But really, people are now picking, cherry picking what they want to go through on vows and what do they want to promise. You can't get away from what this is supposed to be. And as a society, and we're going to get into this as we go, I promise we're going to get through the scripture reading there, and then we'll get on for what we're supposed to be talking about. But I just got hung up on the first line. I got sidetracked right off the bat. You know, when you want to start, if your partner, whether it's your husband to be or your wife to be, starts wanting to cherry pick the parts that they like and leave out the parts they don't like, you're already in trouble. Before you even get off into it, you need to be aware of that. Okay, I rambled along with that. Let's pick up at verse 23. For the husband is head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he's the savior of the body. Now, you'll see as we go through this, you're going to see a lot of this referencing marriage, the church, Christ's relationship with the church, husband's relationship with the wife. One of the things that really gets me is in this life that we live and what the point of it is. And a lot of these things, I mean, we look at marriage. What do you look at marriage as? Well, that's so a man and a woman can be together forever, whether they like it or not. And they can procreate and make more children, blah, 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 blah. Yes, but there is an actual point here because as is referenced here, as we go through here, this comparison, Christ is the head of the church. You see, part of this is given to us is so that we understand God. We get to learn and know about God. And I find that in a lot of things that we have in life. And if you really look for it and you start to understand that as you relate to things in your actual life, you can understand that there are certain parallels or certain connections you can make to like a relationship with God and how God relates to us, how we should relate to him. He's giving the illustration here that understanding that marriage is like a parallel of understanding the relationship with the Lord. He gives us that as part of that so that we understand how we're supposed to be relating to him. So the good news is when you understand that, not only will it help you in marriage, but it actually helps you get closer to the Lord. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word. Now, again, understand that my favorite pet peeve. It's all about action. This is it. Because what's defined as love today has been redefined like every other word in our vocabulary. The word love today has been redefined as lust. I'm going to tell you at some point in time, I don't care how much you quote unquote love her or you quote unquote love him. At some point, the lust's going to die. I'm going to tell you, at some point, the lust is all going to die off. And what are you left with after that? Because if that's all you got, that's all you got going, it's going to be a struggle. If you're going to stick with it, it's going to be a struggle. Because the lust's all going to die. And that's hard because in this culture that we live in, the clown culture that we live in, love has been redefined as lust. It really has. That's why, you know, you can't have a normal conversation as people traditionally have or used to have rather about brotherly love. If you're having just a general conversation and you were talking about a guy, if you as a man were talking about another man and you started going on about how much you love him, what happens? You probably just had a little cringe right there. Oh, you start getting homosexuals, but that's not right. The Bible is full of talk about loving another man. But it's not sex. It's not a lustful love. It means actual love, action, you know, relating to a brother, relating to another man with love. But see, it's cringy now because love is, what do they say? With all this rainbow multi-alphabet letter number, or I just can't spit it out. Multi-alphabet agenda. Love is love. But what they mean is love is anal sex with another man. They've twisted and perverted and just shit all over the word love, the way it's been redefined. So we live in a culture now where love is defined as lust, whether it's for a man or a woman or whatever. So if you're going into one of these things, and again, really, I mean, this isn't aimed for people that I've been married for 25 years and me and my wife, you know, good for you. You've got it figured out. What do you need me to tell you? You know what I'm saying? This is aimed for people that ain't there. This is aimed for people that ain't there yet, ain't even close here yet, or maybe they're in the rocky patch. They've been married a year or so, now the lust has all died, and they're looking over there wondering, what the hell have I done? Anyway, okay. Let's see here. Where are we at? I think we need to pick up at verse 27. We're going to get through this, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it even as the Lord, the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. But nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. So I like here how Paul flat out says, look, I'm showing you how this parallels with Christ's relationship with the church, but I'm also telling you this is how it's supposed to be, how your marriage thing is supposed to be. And so I think we should reread verse 31. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This kind of references to the original or letter from listener supporter, about forsake all others. So you leave your father and mother and you're joined as one unit. You're supposed to be like one unit. But you see, for that to work, wives have to submit to their husbands. You can't have, like, one of the best illustrations I've seen is to say, you know, you can only have one captain on the ship. If you have two captains on the ship, at some point in time, they're going to wind up giving conflicting orders. And the ship's not going to go anywhere. It's just going to go in a circle. And you're going to have this conflict there. I mean, you've got to have somebody in charge. Otherwise, you're trying to run your household on the democracy system. And it doesn't work, just like it doesn't work anywhere else. You've got to have, somebody's got to be in charge. So wives submitting to their husbands is a very important part. Now, something I find interesting as we go through this, as we read this, I was thinking about, because we talk a lot and we hear a lot of talk about the need to limit, put limitations on women's behavior as a society, as a society, as a whole. But if we look at this right here, they're also, you see, it's putting restrictions on men's behavior as well. You see, it's a two-way street here. When the two come together, you're putting restrictions on each other's behavior. A married man will not do the things that a single man will do. Likewise, a married woman should not be doing the things that a single woman should do. If you are in a marriage and you're both doing the things that a single person would do, then you're not doing it right. You see, a marriage that is functioning, you're putting limitations on each other's behavior. And I think a lot of times, like especially in the nationalist community, as we look at our crumbling society and the role that feminism has played, and women are basically gone nuts running around doing all this promoting, advocating all of this insane shit in our societies. And we talk about limiting women's behaviors, but I think so often we don't really seriously, aside from the initial shock value of having the nerve to say that, I really think too often we fail to really talk about what that means. Because it just sounds like you want to put a dog leash on her, you know, bitch, get over here. You know, I mean, it's what it sounds like. But as we look at what we've just read here, I mean, an actual functioning marriage, you're putting limitations on each other's behavior. And you have to have that, not just for a marriage to function properly, but for society to function properly. Now, understand, we live in clown world. Again, it does us no good to spend a bunch of time in, you know, this is what utopia would look like, because unless we have a plan to get from here to there, we're just dreaming. It's a waste of time. We really got to hammer down and always remember we're dealing with reality. When it comes to marriage, as it exists today, the marriage ceremony, marriage is really, when you get down to it, it's not something that is administered by the church. It is administered by the state. It is really, I've said this before, and people don't like it, but the reality of the situation is marriage as defined in the West today, it may be different in other countries. I don't know. I live in the U.S. So, you know, marriage as it is technically, if you want to bear down to it, is nothing more than a legal contract. And as a man, you're going to be punished disproportionately if the contract is dissolved. Because the problem with marriage is, as I've said before, is it's a very poorly and vaguely written contract. But it is a legal contract. That's why if you get divorced, you got to go to the court. You don't go to the church. If it was administered by the church and you just, I can't look at this bitch one more day, I'm getting divorced. You would have, if it was administered by the church, then you as a couple would have to go to the church and go before the church and say, we want to dissolve this marriage contract. We can't do it. And when the church would discuss it, and this would be a church issue. But that's not what happens. You go to court. You go to court, you hire lawyers, and they break down and start talking about what's hers and what his, and most of it's going to be hers. Why is it admissible? If it was from the church would have the authority of whether or not it could be dissolved, but it's not. It's administered by the state. So when it's dissolved, it is the state that takes care of that. We live in reality, not the way things. I'm not saying that's how it should be. I'm just saying the reality is that's where we are. That's the clown society. And I'm not trying to, well, you're just trying to discourage people from getting married. No, I'm trying to make sure that people understand what it is. To get overly hung up on, you know, going down and paying the money and getting your license and then having whoever, somebody you may not even know, stand up there and do a wedding ceremony for you. It does you no good to put blinders on to the reality of what you're partaking in. Because at the end of the day, legally, you're just in a contract. You just signed a contract that's really shitty. It's really written shitty. It's really vague. There's no specifics of, you know, what trigger clauses this and that and you know, what constitutes a violation of the contract. And if there's a case of violation, what happens? It's just vaguely written. The courts get to hash it out. The lawyers get to keep the money. That's why it'll never be changed, because the lawyers are profiting off of it. They always talk about the divorce rate in the United States is this much. If you think of, say, we'll say, I don't know, because it's going to vary, but let's say for every divorce in the country, there's two lawyers involved, and each one's making $4,000 apiece off the divorce. Your mileage may vary. Some people cost a lot more, some people less. But we'll say $4,000. So that's $8,000 per divorce in the country is going to the lawyer class. Do you think any of these marriage laws are ever going to be changed? I don't think so. It's a lot of money. A lot of money being made off of it, off people's misery, suffering. Now, the original letter from our listener here was relaying the story of a younger guy. I don't know. Normally somebody comes to you with this stuff, they're a younger guy, I'm assuming. But of a person, and his problem, he's been married about a year. His in-laws are starting to get up in his business. Now, if the two are joined and they're now one, they're supposed to be functioning as one unit. Parents ain't got no business being up in, they got no business being up in your business. You know what I'm saying? They're the ones not respecting what are supposed to be the marriage vows, what are supposed to be how this works. In such a situation, just diplomatically speaking, this is nothing biblically speaking, diplomatically speaking, in such a situation, the wife should be the one to jump in there and tell her parents to back off. The husband, and vice versa, this would work either way. But the wife in this case is the one who should step in between and say, hey, why are you all up in our business? You know, this isn't your concern. It's not right for a husband or a wife to have to deal with the in-laws directly on something like that. That's your job. That's where you join together, you one flesh. Now, whichever the husband or the wife's parents that are crossing the line and starting to nose into their business, that person's your parents. You need to step in and say, wait. I forsook my mother and father to become one flesh. Now, you know, it doesn't mean you can't still honor your mother and father, but they're dishonoring you. You got to put that. There's nothing dishonorable. I guess I'm going to phrase this correctly in a minute. There's nothing dishonorable. You're not dishonoring your mother and father by putting boundaries up. That's respect. There's a difference between, you know, it's not honoring your mother and father to let them get up in your business in a situation such as this, and they're crossing boundaries. There's nothing like you're dishonoring your mother and father by putting boundaries up. That's not dishonoring them. But that, I think, just diplomatically speaking, because again, biblically speaking, the husband's the one in charge. But why is the husband going to be hesitant in this case? Tell his in-laws, you need to back up out of my damn business. It's none of your business. Well, because then it's going to cause conflict. They're going to get mad. Then the wife's going to be mad because now she's already, you done disrespected my mom and daddy. And now you've got all of this conflict because she's not submitting to her husband. You see, I mean, technically, biblically speaking, the husband's job is to handle that. Not the wife's job. But diplomatically speaking, the wife should be, whoa. Pull her parents to the side. Y'all need to back off of this. We got this. You got to support each other. That's the diplomatic way to handle it. Because when you're having to handle your business with your in-laws, too often it causes conflict. You can head that off just, you know, diplomatically speaking. It's a better way to do that. Now, this is as good a point as any to stop and point out that if you define marriage down to a commitment to spend your entire life together. If you define it as that, you need to understand, man or woman, that you're never marrying just that one person. You're marrying his family. So if you're like, oh, I love her. She's such a sweet thing. What do you think of her parents? I can't stand them. They're absolutely horrible. But that's okay. I'll just keep her away from that. Does not work. You are marrying her family. If you can't stand her mom and daddy, it's doomed. Doomed. Might as well not bother. Also, the old timer adage about, you know, because one thing in failed marriages, there's a commonality. And that is the person you divorce is not the person you married. You said, oh, I love him. I can't wait to spend the rest of my life. I'm just so excited. It's my special day. I'm getting married. On the divorce day is I'm rid of that asshole. Oh my gosh. He was, you know, it's not the same. It's not the same person. in your mind. The things have changed. But most of the time, it's due to ignoring these red flags. If you can't stand your mom and daddy, it's not going to work out. If you want to know what she looks like in the future, what relationships? Like, well, she's the sweetest thing. What's her mama like? She's a bitch. Guess what? Guess what your future holds. It's a good indicator. I really wish we could bring back the idea. If we lived, well, it wouldn't work right now because we live in such a dysfunctional society. But in a small, really close-knit community, it could work. But if we had a functional society, which we don't, but if we did, so we're just speaking in hypotheticals here. I really wish we could bring back arranged marriages. Well, why? Because, you know, people get blinded by lust, you know, and by that physical attraction, which is your brain's natural operating function to make sure you reproduce. But they get blinded by that and they think that's love and it's not love. And then when the lust dies, they think, oh, the love died and we just don't love each other. We've grown apart. Well, you haven't grown apart. The lust has died off now. Your brain can't just keep pumping you full of those chemicals saying breed, make children. It can't keep just doing that indefinitely. So it is inevitable it's going to die off. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with the relationship. When the lust all dies, it don't mean, oh, well, it's just we've grown apart. We no longer love each other. No, it's just those chemicals aren't being released anymore. Don't freak out. Understand it. But see, if we had arranged marriages, you bypass all of that because the parents set it up. And your parents are going to be looking at it rationally. I mean, really, think about it. Is a parent, like if you had a son or a daughter that was of a marriage age and, you know, you were looking forward to several years down the road, they were going to be of a marrying age. I mean, and so you're out, you know, who are you going to set them up with? Well, you're going to be looking at the family. It gets logical instead of this whole, whoo, yeah, we got a bunch of chemicals pumping through our brains. It's love. Let's breed. You work at it logically because inevitably your parents are going to try to pick the best person they can for you. And let's be honest, people don't always do that. Most of the time, people don't do that. See, a man is going to go find a hardworking guy whose parents have a good track record. They're going to find a guy for their daughter that they got a pretty good. This guy, he comes from good breeding. You know, his parents are hard workers. They've been married. You know, I've met this young man's daddy and we're on the same wavelength. It's going to be because left to her own devices, your daughter's liable to go run off with some guy from a rock band or some stupid shit, you know. And then gets knocked up and then gets quote unquote married and then shock of shocks. He stays strung out on drugs or whatever all of the time. And it just doesn't work because she married this bad boy and a bunch of random stupid shit. If you've got arranged marriages, she's going to, okay, well, this is going to be your agreement to be. Say, oh, he's boring. Tough shit, bitch. You're getting married. Then it kind of gets, I guess what I'm saying is you bypass this whole bad route of all of this lust and navigating and what does this mean? And you go straight to the, okay, well, what do we have in common here? Well, let's start talking. Let's start getting to know each other. And the other thing, and if you've ever heard interviews and stuff from people that come from countries that do still do like India or something that still do arranged marriages, I saw a deal one time, it's been a long time ago, and they were talking to a woman, you know, a young couple in India, and they had their marriage was arranged, and of course the woman, quote unquote, journalist was, you know, trying to, you know, shoehorn this angle of how awful this is and how oppressed you are. And she was going on and on. And finally, this young Indian woman told her, said, well, I'm looking at how things are working out in your system in the U.S. at the divorce rates, and they're not so good either. You know, she's like, this young woman said, well, you know, yeah, I was basically, you know, I didn't know anything about him, but then we were kind of forced to get to know each other. You see, you don't have to worry about all of the preliminaries because your mom and daddy take care of that. Their mom and daddy work all of that out. Well, is this guy going to be a good provider? And all this stuff, you're not left on your own. Your parents negotiated all that. They picked and screened. You weren't just screening it through what kind of dopamine is going through my brain right now. It was being screened logically. It set you up with a nice young man. And normally, you know, the lust thing's going to flare up. It's like, well, you know, that that's going to happen because your parents are going to try to pick somebody that's a good match for you. But alas, that's just a, it's just a hypothetical. We don't live anywhere near a functioning society or where we could, you know, have something like that where we could look at these things logically, partake in them logically, but it's just, it's a fun exercise and it would be better than what we've got going now. What we got going now is fine young men, you know, who are trying hard to trying to live life right. They work hard. They're trying to build a life. They want to build a life. They want to build a future. They're going full incel because all of these bitches are running around chasing the same one asshole. The same one asshole. They're all running around chasing him. That's where we're at right now. You got these fine young men. I mean, yeah, no, they're never gonna, I don't know, lead a charge, you know, command a fleet of battleships in a glorious battle that'll be written down in history or some shit, but they're a regular hardworking guy and they would provide and take care of a family for their whole lives. They're going full incel. All these bitches are running around chasing some guy who really, if you get down to the logical part of it, is really never going to be worth a shit. But that's the one they want. Anyway, I'm getting off on tangents again. Now, as we've got to start kind of looking at the clock here, we need to start doing the whole steering. I got to start reeling this in. I got to start rounding this up. We got to start loading the cattle in the trailer. We got them in the trap. Now we got them in the pen. Now we got to run them up, shoot, get them in the trailer. We got to wrap this up. So as we start winding this down, I'm not trying to discourage people from getting married. These topics always kind of turn into, I ain't never getting married after, I ain't never getting married after listening to what you had to say. That's not the point. But you don't do people any kind of service. In fact, you do them a great disservice if you don't encourage people to look at things truthfully, you know, to look at things as they are. As a more mature person, say if you're middle-aged and you've been married successfully, the same woman over these years, it might even seem easy to you, but you have to understand, you know, you've already got your stuff lined up. These younger people are the ones struggling. You know, what can I tell somebody that's been married for 50 years? You know, an older couple, they've been married for 50 years, you know. Well, you know, GPD, what do you got to say to them? Well, not much. They've obviously got it figured out. You know, and what they have figured out for them may not work for somebody else, but they've got it figured out. There's not much I can contribute to that. It's always the younger people, people like what is in the listener's letter here, that, you know, they've been married about a year, the lust is starting to die off, and now they're having to start dealing with the bullshit. These are the people that need guidance. These are the people that, you know, or maybe they haven't even got into the situation yet, you know. And again, I'm not, my intention here is not to say, don't get married, steer clear from bitches no matter what. But everybody, man or woman, you should realize what you're getting into and what it means and what you have to look forward to. When lust starts dying off, don't freak out. Doesn't mean your love has died. No, it just means things are starting to settle in. I'm just so sick of the day-to-day routine. That's life. That is life. Life is not your honeymoon. Life is not your wedding day when you're a princess. Life is not this dream thing. Life is basically, when you get down to it, is working all the time. It is. You work, you go home, you eat, and then you go to bed and get up, wash, rinse, and repeat the next day. It's very mundane. It's very boring. It's very tiring. But that's life. You're going to get tired of each other. That's life. You know, you can't just, this is where the love comes in. This is where the action comes in, that you kind of try to stick it out and you try to keep moving forward. You start building something. Start building something together. Understand, we talk about the necessity to put limits on women's behavior, and it is very, very necessary. But it's not like put a dog leash on her and teach her, come, sit, heel. Yeah, I mean, that's not what we're talking about here. True marriage, you're putting limits on both people's behavior. But you there's got to be limits. We live in this, everything's twisted in society right now. And it's going to be reflected in institutions like relationships and marriage and things such as this. Because right now in clown society, there's virtually zero restrictions on women's behavior. And you're having this ever increasing restrictions on the behaviors of men, what you're allowed to say, what you're allowed to think. You know, oh, you're looking at me and you don't look at me and I want your attention, but you're not giving me that attention. You're sexually harassing me. It's just constant all over the place. This is what you get when you stray from the natural order as a society. But anyway, we're not going to get off on that tangent. We're going to wrap it up. Hopefully this helps somebody out. And I appreciate Mr. T bringing us the listener supporter topic this week. Just went ahead and shoehorned that in for the Christian specific segment. So anyway, hopefully this is useful for somebody. We're going to back on out of here. Once again, thank you to all of those of you financially supporting the show. It means a lot. So yeah, we're going to go ahead and back on out of here, and we'll be back next Tuesday right here at Radio Albion for the Parish of the Patriots.